and our meeting is live.
Okay, I hereby call to order the Delaware Community Energy Special Meeting Agenda of Monday, March 23rd, 2026. Now, can we have a roll call, please?
Yes, City of Palm Desert?
Here.
City of Palm Springs?
Here.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, please join me and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance if you're able. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Have any agenda modifications from staff or the board?
No.
Nope. Okay. Conflict of interest disclosure? Do I need to do anything with that?
No.
No, please, I don't. Okay, now, public comments. This is the first of two opportunities to address the board. Any person wishing to address the Desert Community Energy Board on items appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Please limit comments to 3 minutes. Do we have any public comment?
Chair, we do not.
Okay. Are there any board member or executive director comments?
Just really quickly, I know we'll be talking about this at the end of the agenda, but just wanted to share that at this point, our intention is to cancel the April meeting for the board, and so our next meeting would be May 18th.
Okay.
Thank you.
I did want to make a comment that if possible, we can get the agenda out a little bit earlier than 72 hours going forward, if possible, or?
Yes, Chair, thank you. Yeah, we will work to wherever possible to get them out. I think that would often be a Wednesday before. Sometimes you know, it's not always possible given data that we work, but we will make that a goal.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay, now we have our first item, 4A. We get a fiscal year 2025-26 budget amendment and fiscal year 26-27 projection. Can we get a staff report, please?
Thank you, Chair. I'm Vice Chair Chavez. Oh, we got some slides for you.
Oh, I think it's
that. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Okay. So we have the budget amendment, as you noticed, and we also included a fiscal year projection for next fiscal year, being that that's something we're going to be jumping into a little more deeply in the upcoming meeting. And just kind of jump into this. Some of this is a continuation from a conversation, a staff report that was provided in November when Lisa, the director Lisa here, and the consultants from the Energy Authority came in and gave an overview of some of the factors affecting this year's budget, and just want to highlight a couple items on that. At the end of the day, we're going to see a $1.2 million decrease in kind of the bottom line, as it were. That's mostly driven by $8.8 million decrease in revenue and about a $7.5 million decrease in costs, which is actually a positive, as it were. So we'll jump into those figures in a second, but just wanted to highlight the kind of big picture there. There's no rate increase with this budget amendment either. So let's just jump into that. So in the staff report, there's some lines there. Line 7 in the attachment to this item lists the total retail revenue, and that's net of the allowance for uncollectible accounts, so those people who aren't paying on their bill. So we originally budgeted about $66 million for this, and in the amended budget, we're actually having to decrease that by 16%, roughly $10.7 million. And obviously, that's not a positive impact for the budget. That's somewhat of a negative impact. So let's just jump into and talk about what's causing that. And as is the case most often for DC, those are a lot of external factors that cause this. And the biggest one of those happened in June 2025. That was just maybe 10 days after this budget was approved in June. The CPUC made a decision that actually changed the way that the exit fee, if you recall, that's the power charge and difference adjustment. It's what all CCA customers in California are basically charged for energy that was procured before their departure from the IOU, the investor-owned utility. So you might recall this slide, you probably don't remember, but this slide actually pulled it from last June's staff report, because we talked about, okay, here's the formula for this PCIA. It's a portfolio cost minus the market value of the portfolio is more or less, with a little noise, what equals this charge. that if it's negative, it's actually a good thing. And if it's positive, it's not such a good thing because it reduces DC's revenue. So in June, this decision changed how certain products are valued at market, and that actually had an increase to the PCIA, which means the revenue decreases for DCE. And it wasn't just any increase, it was actually a 300% increase. So it went from negative the past few years to this huge positive number that is really outside of DCE's control. Although we've been monitoring the situation, Lisa sits on lots of different committees and things with the regulatory agency that we're our advocate, what is the Cal CCA, would you call them?
An association, yes, that helps us with budget and regulatory issues.
So we've really been tracking this. Of course, here's my shocked old man face emoji, because you get, you know, a few years on you after you hear this kind of news. So that was the biggest driver of that decrease in revenue. And just to kind of paint a big picture, we talked about Cal CCA. They've been following this. Two different sets of charts here. On the left, you can see that the generation rate and the PCIA is that tiny little gray part. They're relatively at parity, whereas on the right hand, the 2026 rates is what we're talking about. There's a huge gap there that's having to be met by these all the CCAs, really. And some CCAs are actually having to increase rates. Again, I mentioned earlier, we're not increasing rates with this budget amendment. We're holding them steady. A few are decreasing them, but they're having to use reserves to do that. In fact, there's one CCA we know of who is completely depleting their rate stabilization reserve. That's about $30 million they're taking out this year just to hit a zero revenues minus expenses. So not to get any type of a bottom line other than a goose egg, really. So we're really fortunate to be in actually a fairly decent position compared to some of what these other CCAs are going through. The other factor you might have read in the staff report, we've been trying to pin some of the load, which is what DCE serves to its electricity customers. And we had about 3 months out of the eight that represent the actuals in this budget where load came in or above a budget, but we're seeing some months where it's below budget, and that could be related to people not setting the thermostat as low, maybe, or it could be, although it always feels hot in the desert, it might not be sustained deep heat like we thought might happen in July and August. Maybe it's more of a mild a summer, as it were, and electrification plays into that process too if things aren't being electrified as much as we initially projected. So that's something that we're actively working with our consultants to build out our load for next year, and we're really pressing with them to identify where we can make sure we're getting the most reasonable inputs for that, and kind of, I guess, challenging some of our original assumptions, as it were. So that was the revenue side, right? So we had the PCIA impact, the biggest piece, and we also had the load coming in under budget in some months that brought our revenue down. On the expenses side, in line 14, we look at the wholesale power supply. We originally budgeted about, $59 million, and that is now being projected at about $52 million, which is 12% or almost $7 million less on the expense side than was projected. And that's obviously really good news, right? Because we don't have to recover all those costs that we thought we might have to. So that's a bit of positive news. You might remember last year we were in here and looking at the rising costs for some of those products. So it's really the opposite this year. Prices have peaked in some respects and gone down. And again, these are mostly external factors like the resource adequacy cost, which is the capacity for the grid. Those prices have really dropped since prior years. And then we have renewables and the renewable energy certificates to meet those greenhouse gas reductions. That's so important to the city and the residents here. So those costs have actually decreased, which is positive. So we've talked a little bit of external factors. Really some of the internal that DCE can impact are our operational costs. So happy also to report here some good news that we originally budgeted about $2.2 million, almost $2.3 really, in budgeted internal operation costs for salaries and benefits and other things of overhead nature. And that's coming in well below what we had originally anticipated, almost 30% less. That's saving nearly $700,000 off of the original budget amount, which is obviously a positive as well. So we're controlling what we can and where we can. As you can tell, most factors are external, but this one is internal, and positive news there. And we're probably wondering, you know, what does all this mean? If you didn't catch it already, it's going to be, at the end of the day, we're going to have almost $3 million increase in net position is what we're budgeting. And we had originally set us maybe a $4.1 million. So a little disparity there. But like we mentioned earlier, not quite what other CCAs are seeing, even larger than us. We're going to be doing a little better than that. No rate increase with this amendment. And this fixed charge coverage, which we've been talking a lot about the past few years. I know, Vice Chair Chavez, you're probably wondering, you know, why aren't we hitting the 2.0 mark? Or maybe you're not, but I thought you might be. So
I read through, but no.
Okay. The 2.0 is something that S&P Global Ratings, who issued our credit rating, kind of target us to see. We feel that there's a balance, though, between rate shock and getting the coverage we need. 1.6 is actually a very strong metric we learned from some of our counterparts out there about what they look for. So we feel like it's a fair balance. We don't know what's going to happen at the end of the day, but there's some positive signs. In fact, last year when we did the budget amendment, we had targeted 2.1 times, and it ended up coming at almost 2.5 times. And that really comes to this whole, SCE has this filing. I'm about to get into it a little bit more, but basically that whole PCA concept and their energy, what's the ERA stands for? The Lisa, do you remember what the ERA forecast is?
Energy Resource Recovery Account.
Right. So that's what drives their market value of their portfolio. So we have reason to believe that that's going to come in lower. And while that is negative on the PCIA impact, it actually decreased some of the cost of the contracts we have with them for those same products. So it's kind of a little double whammy, but in a positive way. So we're really hoping it might come up higher than this. So today we're going to amend the budget. We're going to continue to monitor it. We're not anticipating any changes to any rate schedules, but if there was anything, we'd have to operate that under the authority established in the rate stabilization schedule. And then, you know, in June we'll come back and we'll have a new budget for next year. I did want to briefly touch on that. I didn't really prepare too many slides because we'll be going over that soon. But for fiscal year 27, I want to note that we are currently showing a net margin or kind of bottom line of about $8 million. We do feel that some rose-colored glasses looking at that as that whole PCIA for 2027 is going to be released on May 15th. So we're going to know a lot more on May 15th and be able to refine these numbers. So I wouldn't be surprised if this dropped even quite significantly from where it's at now. But again, we'll use the best information possible. You might also note next year that the wholesale power costs are dropping significantly, I think $10 million or so. And that's mostly due to the resource adequacy cost. For example, in this year's a budget, those costs were about $17 million. And we're anticipating those to be closer to $8 million next year. So those are kind of the key things. And Lisa and I are working with the Energy Authority, who does our load forecasting, to really hone in on that. So those were a couple things I wanted to note about next year's budget. Chair Chavez, I forgot to put in the staff report, but we're looking to end this year with about $35 million in cash on hand, and then a year from June 2027 would be about $43 million. So when we actually look at that compared to our operating expenses, knowing those are going down, we're going to be sitting at the end of this year above our basic reserves, it looks like, and really strong. So when the operating cost goes down, right, that's a factor into our reserves. So things are looking really good on the cash front too. So with that, I asked if you have any questions, we can address them now, or comments or direction. Otherwise, it would be great to get approval to move forward with the amendment.
Vice Chair, any questions, comments?
I do. I have a couple of questions. I thank you for going through it. It's very simple to read it, so I get this piece of it. But I did have a couple of questions when we talk about the revenues and the fluctuation that comes with PCIA.
PCIA, Power Charge and Difference Adjustment.
Thank you. Uh-huh. And then even the ERRA changes. Within our reserve policy, do we have a distinct bucket for each of those, for those fluctuations?
Potential? We have the rate stabilization schedule.
That
would be that one. And actually, it's a really great question you're asking. As part of our budget packet, when we come back, we'd like to formalize that a little more. We kind of set these buckets up, but we haven't really been in a place where we can use them. I mentioned this other CCA who's pulling the $30 million. Well, they actually deferred those revenues. There's a way under the accounting rules you can defer them to kind of keep rate shock out of the picture. So the ERRA, which is a filing that the investor-owned utility Southern California Edison makes, plays into the PCIA. So I think they fit under that rate stabilization schedule, but there will be some work when we come in May or June with the budget to clarify how that's going to actually operate now that we might be able to, in practice, do that if we're getting enough revenues next year.
No, totally. I think the more we know, the more we learn, the better it is to refine that policy and make sure, like, if these are inverse relationships between the two, it's helpful to you to be able to plan and have those be distinct. So I just wanted to ask that and see if we could kind of look at that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We'll definitely call out the PCIA in the rate stabilization special reserve.
And if it doesn't make sense, just tell us it doesn't make sense.
Okay, well, I'll definitely address that.
The other one I had is on the expense side. As far as the cost of purchasing energy, so you're saying the reduction is actually the price, not the amount of an energy purchased, correct?
More or less, yes.
That's probably a combo, but more of one than the other.
Definitely way more of the market price is going down. Okay. There might be, I would just call noise, anything else. I mean, okay. One example, we've worked hard, I think one of the budgetary factors in November was to make sure we're not overachieving in some of the renewable portfolio standards so that our carbon-free product's really carbon-free, but maybe Desert Saver doesn't have to achieve some of what we have in the past. So, but that's under $1 million impact.
Okay.
So
and
that's
then
market-driven.
On the operating expenses, mm-hmm. the drop from on staffing costs between original and amended, did we drop a staff person? It looks like a body, and I'm just wondering, did we change staff, the makeup, or?
Do we have a vacant position, Lisa?
Yeah, so we've had a vacant position that we had intended to fill. What happened as we moved through the year, we had another staff person on a scheduled leave. And so we kind of backfilled for that, didn't feel like that was the appropriate time to also bring in somebody new. And so you're seeing some of the salary savings from that one vacant position. Others of us sort of devoted more of our time to sort of fill in for that particular gap. And so we'll be looking at that for the next year. I think it is a position that we want to have the option to fill in the future.
Okay, so it doesn't look like it's in there yet, but we might put it back.
Oh, it wouldn't be in this fiscal year. I think
I was looking and it's projected because it looks like it's very similar. So okay. I just wanted to make
we
sure.
We might have just for this put like a 3%.
Okay. On actual.
On
yeah.
actual.
Projected, I mean. Okay.
Yeah, from the last, like the column there, we probably just applied a
basic. Yeah, so that may be a place where you'll see a change when we bring the budget back.
Okay, those were my only questions on this piece.
And so just to follow up on the, thank you. So just to follow up on the expenses, so if we're going back with the staff, then we're going back in the operating expenses to what we sort of originally planned for this year, mm-hmm. right?
Probably closer to that.
And do we think the other changes, the other cut, the cost, power costs are going to remain? Are there savings, are there expenses?
For next year, yes. I just was on with our consultant today, kind of asking a few prodding questions just to make sure we're buttoned up, and it's really has to do with those RA costs, the resource adequacy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's almost.
$10 million you were talking about.
Right. I think this year that was cost for about $17 million, and next year they're projecting about $8 million.
And can you clarify just in the revenue, what is makes up the other operating revenue?
Sometimes we work really hard. Well, we always work really hard, and sometimes it pays off that we can actually capitalize on some resources in our portfolio, and we have really good working relationships with other CCAs that we can actually, if we have over procured to be safe, we can actually sell pieces of that and get the revenue for that or do a swap with them. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's been occasion, I think you remember in the conversations about the midterm reliability. Our allocated share was small, but the chunks that the market was offering were a little bit larger. And so at one point we were looking at potentially selling some of that. That fell through, but that's the kind of example. We also sometimes hold on to it. So we had a we now have to buy more midterm reliability, which I, at this point we will not have to come back to the board and ask for any other expenses for that because we had had that larger amount in those other contracts.
Okay. And then in terms of the revenue, what do you think is sort of weather or structural, like electrification or other types of things that maybe?
Well, the load is actually the smaller, the PCA is the big piece of this thing. The 300% increase going from negative, which is a good thing, to positive, that's driving all of this. So if you know any CPUC commissioners and can have the city comment on kind of these decisions that they're making that are favorable to the IOU, you know, I think that would, I don't know how much it would help, but that would be one place I would point. I know, Lisa, from your work on CalCCA, since it is such an industry-wide matter at this point, they are really trying to put some creative wheels into how can we stop having these huge fluctuations? Is there a way, and this is far out there, no one's saying this is going to happen, is there a way we can pay off, like do a one-time payment? Was that, like there's some creative solutions.
The decision that was done in January was track one. They're very formal and legalistic. Track three of that, so we're still several years out, will be to look at other options for how to do it. You know, is there a way to sunset the PCIA? Is there a way for an allocation? Is there a way? I'm just throwing out ideas. None of these are ones that have anybody's formal approval or that we're specifically advocating for. You know, it might be a buy down. And we don't know what would even be allowed, but those are the kinds of things that are being asked. Again, for that price stability, it's frustrating. I know it's frustrating for you all to have a budget and then come back and it's so dramatically different. And we'll always have some of that because our load is a little unpredictable. Who knew March would be like this? You know, June is, you know, June's a crapshoot, right? To try to have the prices at least exhibit a little bit more when they're driven by regulatory factors, having a little bit more ability to see out. And so, you know, this is, again, 2 or 3 years out. It's something we could bring, you know, maybe there's an appropriate time to bring back and let and share what some of those options are, but maybe too much in the weeds.
Well, it does make sense to look at options if, you know, if this kind of volatility is going to create havoc.
Right, and those options would have to be decided by the CPUC.
Yeah.
But that's why we're fighting with our CalCCA, the association, to look at that. One thing that might help some of this, and it's internal discussions, and we're not quite there yet, but maybe changing the DC's fiscal year to a calendar year would help with this budgeting process, because that's what the utility's on, and it would align better with. We would have the information at the right time. So might not be right away that we can do that internally with their current staffing, but I think that would help smooth out some of these mid-year budget adjustments at least. It wouldn't change the PCAA, but that would have to be fought with the CPUC and the utility.
Right.
If that's a better word, might be.
Sort of makes sense.
Yeah. That'd be nice, I think, for all
but
of
we're
us.
Not changing rates, and so that's good. We're not tipping into reserves,
that's right.
So that's good. So we're better than could be.
And better than other CCAs out there.
Yeah.
Yes, there were some hard conversations, I think, at some other board meetings in January and February.
Yeah. So, but then we'll have another whole nother idea in June. We'll see what happens in the next couple of months.
We're really waiting for that May 15th, that first era forecast that the SCE will file. It will tell us what these market value, the portfolio costs are going to be, and therefore what the PCAA is going to do and how that impacts our revenue.
We just have no idea until they do that.
I mean, we have a model that shows $8 million, but you're right. I mean, it's really hard, and we press our consultants, probably on the line now. If Sarah's there, she knows how much. I'm like, well, Sarah, like, let's, if we think it's going to, the PCAA is going to go up even more, let's kind of look at that. But what can we use? We have to use the model, and this model's from CalCCA, and it's a new gen, very, very high tech, and really the best inputs we have right now are what's presented.
So the number, and so the, obviously the numbers you put for 26, 27 are all just sort of guesses until we know what happens.
I would say very educated, calculated estimates.
Yes.
That can feel like
but
guesswork.
Looking positive, which is good. Stay
right,
positive.
Right, and we pay for that modeling too, that the other CCAs share the same model. So it's definitely not like an in-house thing that we're, it's an industry-wide reputable model.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ask the net margin, you're looking at $8.2 million. So.
Right, so, but again.
I know. Okay.
We'll see how it happens May 15th.
Okay, I think that would be my questions. I mean, obviously, if anything, we just got to watch it closely. I mean, if the FCC drops more, then we could have issues to deal with. And PCIA, we got to watch it all. Okay.
You're right. We have to watch this stuff. You're absolutely right. And we do watch it every month, even if we're not here having a meeting every month and in between those months. We're really on that stuff.
Okay. Is our May meeting after the date?
Just after. So okay. It may not be able to be reflected in staff reports, but we may be able to share in a presentation some either an amended update or maybe more likely a presentation.
Okay. Those are all my questions.
I actually did have one more question. Mm-hmm. Michael, you said FCC and I remember. On the fixed charge coverage, I think I read in here that staff does the calculation to determine, you know, the ratio. Is any piece of that potentially, I don't want to say arbitrary, but staff's best estimate, or is there a model for that as well that we follow that all the other cities?
Right. I think the answer is we got that calculation from the rating agency in the opinion they gave us a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. We followed that same calculation. We're due a conversation with them. They're supposed to be reaching out any month now. I'll bring up one other point on that is they're only looking at the power purchase agreements and energy storage agreements, the fixed charges of those PPAs, like the Terrigens that you might remember, the wind facilities we have. And that's how they calculated it. There is there's variable products we have with SCE, the variable allocation products that play into all this conversation that they didn't include in their calculation, but staff is inclined to look at those in the same manner, which might require a stronger fixed charge coverage. So if there's any ambiguity, it's that piece of it that's not baked into these year's numbers, calculated with this year's numbers. But for next year, it might be a metric that we want to include. It would make our numbers stronger. And we would hate for the rating agency to have made an oversight maybe in their original calculation. So That's just where there might be some room. But otherwise, we feel very comfortable. That's how they told us to cap. That's how they calculated, and we recalculated.
Okay.
Anything else? Do we have a motion to approve the amendment?
I will move to approve.
I will second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Don't you got a gavel?
Passes.
Thank you.
Okay. We are now on to the additional authorizations for the prepaid bond financing. Could we have a staff report, please?
Yeah, so Chair, Claude and I are going to sort of jointly give this update. He and I have been working closely on this. This is, of course, our efforts to implement a prepayment bond financing agreement, which we'll often shorten to just prepay. So, you know, if you're in the know, you can call it prepay. Next slide. So what is, again, you all went over this in November. What is a transaction? It's not really a Rube Goldberg machine, but there really are a lot of steps, but we have a real benefit at the end to this. So next slide. So staff introduced this concept last November, which is being considered again because of its potential cost savings, which, if I can steal Claude's thunder, are not reflected in that budget preview for next year, right?
That's right.
Right. So just go ahead and cycle through. So, you know, at a high level, Treasury regulations allow municipal bonds to be used to prepay for the cost of our electricity contracts. We're not liable then for that bond debt. DCE is not. And most of the costs are contingent upon the bond going through and covered by the bond proceeds. The main risk to DCE would just be to lose that discount and return to the status quo, where we're just paying for the regular prices. So just really quickly, kind of step one, at the November meeting, you authorized two contracts to get us started. With the first one, Tyler Noble and John Norman of MG Advisory Group are under contract now to advise staff and the board on the entire process of establishing a prepay. You wouldn't believe the emails we've already sent him, you know, what is this again kind of thing. This contract was executed in January, and Mr. Noble is actually on the call with us virtually, just in case he can answer any questions, but I have full faith that Claude will also be able to walk you through that, any questions you have. The next slide, for the Project Participant Council, again, somebody else that's on our side, helping us on the legal aspects of things. DCE was able to piggyback on a contract with San Diego Community Power with Chapman, which is a leader in this kind of work. So we secured the same terms and are in the process of finalizing that agreement right now. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Claude for kind of step two of this.
Okay, thanks.
And a preview of step three.
Sounds good. It's real exciting stuff. We love the prepay, and we've been working really hard with Redwood Coast Energy, and want to shout out to them. I don't think they're listening, but they've been great partners to do this jointly with. So let's see. Lisa talked about a couple of the key people we had on already. So in the staff report, the recommendation, one of them is to join the California Community Choice Financing Authority, because they are really the only cost-effective option and more or less the only conduit that all other CCAs in California have used. So luckily for us, you know, there's some other bigger players out there in the CCA space, and they attempted other means and it wasn't gonna be cost effective. So they actually came together and formed this board. So it's a board and a JPA actually of only other CCAs who have done this. We're definitely not the first, and we have that as part of this. They're going to be issuing these bonds for the transaction. The electricity supplier and the underwriting bank is another key piece for this step number two, if we will. And we did a fairly competitive process. We got, I think, four responses to a proposal we put out there. And we actually selected Goldman Sachs to be that supplier for this contract and do the underwriting. Their recipient pool, the funding recipient, is a really key piece of this. They had the most diverse funding recipient pool. They actually had the lowest cost as well. I did a lot of reference calls, and it sounded like they had really strong execution for the deal itself. And then they had the largest and back office team to support the CCA's post-close. So those were some of the reasons we selected to go with Goldman Sachs. So kind of after these first two selections, we really have a couple other pieces of work to do. So coming soon is really, Lisa and I and others, Tom, have to work with those PPA suppliers, the developers who we have those contracts with, and get that power assigned into the deal. So that's some of our wind fleet. And we also have to work to try to get the variable allocation in there as well. So it's kind of like getting in the nitty-gritty with what can be assigned into this transaction. Also, the funding recipient, I mentioned they're very important. Goldman's going to bring them to us, and this could be like an insurance company, or it could be a really innovative product they did recently was with the Real Estate Investment Trust. So they're the ones who have the credit rating that these bonds get issued at. And also, you see how they're making the scheduled payments. Well, they're setting those payments at that corporate taxable rate. Which is the difference in how we get the discount from the bonds that we issue on the far right when we are paying that power price to triple CFA. So they're a super important player in this process, and we have to establish deal goals, basically transaction goals. So if we're going to say, okay, we have to hit the 10% and we want to do this initial structure of the prepay for 7 or 8 years because it has to reset. After a certain amount of time for the period of the bonds. They'll reset a couple times. Sorry about that. We have to have goals. We know another CCAs that's gone out to the market a few weeks ago. You might know what's going on in the Middle East. So, you know, we're going to be working with Goldman and saying, hey, we said we're going to need X amount out of this. So, you know, let's not go to market and issue those bonds yet. So that's kind of another coming soon. And probably the final piece of that is issuing those bonds through the conduit triple CFA. So those are really the three pieces: assigning the contracts, setting our transaction goals, and then actually going out and pricing these things and selling the bonds on the market one day. It'll be very exciting. We'll get a call like 6 a.m. probably to go ahead and move forward. So, well, you know, New York time. So that's the main pieces. Lisa, do you want to add anything?
Well, I think just the other thing that we kind of need in step two is then the tax and bond council. So yeah, that's the group that will, you know, kind of make sure that this passes, you know, that complies with the different IRS regulations and other things. And so sometimes that can be hired by CCCFA, but we wanted to seek authorization to go ahead, maybe establish a contract. It might help us move forward more quickly. And so that's the other thing that we had on the recommendation request for today.
And again, it's all to save the ratepayers what we're hoping to be at least $1 million a year, which goes right to, you know, their pocketbook in a way. So that was our presentation. The recommendation's broken into three sections. We're going to be working with Goldman Sachs. We're asking you to authorize us to join California Community Choice Financing Authority. There's some fees involved with that. And then we need to go out and negotiate the agreement with the Tax and Bond Council, as Lisa mentioned. So do you have any questions for us?
Questions? Just the one that just pops into my head is, do we not have a requirement for disclosure council, which is separate from bond council?
I think it's wrapped up into, I'm not sure, is Tyler on the line? It's probably better to ask.
They're usually two separate entities. So okay. one represents you, which is your tax and bond council, and looks out for DCE. The other one is actually looking at the documents that they're sending out to the buyers.
Okay, so I imagine the answer is going to be those are issued through triple CFA.
Okay.
So they probably have the council for disclosures, but is Tyler on the line? So he's going to, Tyler is from Mohan.
MG Advisories.
Oh, okay.
That's just the official name.
Gotcha.
Hey, there you can speak, everybody. This is Tyler Noble. Yeah, great question. And there's sometimes the role of the disclosure and the offering documents is performed by separate disclosure counsel, and other times it is combined with and provided by the same attorney that is the underwriter's counsel. So as we get further along, we'll look into it. It's typically in a Goldman Sachs transaction. The firm named Nixon Peabody has done most of the disclosure work. But then also your participant counsel, Chapman, Doug Bird, who was recently brought on board, will assist Desert and Redwood with compiling the disclosure information for each of the CCAs.
And we can make sure that in our next staff report that we make sure that's clear where that ends up. My understanding is some of these, just like with the tax and bond counsel, we could, you know, it could be done one way or another in terms of engaging. And so this is another, but we'll make sure that's clear.
And then I guess to that, any continuing disclosures, like how we intend to make sure that someone, if not, you know, DCE, if someone is managing that for us, so that the CDAC filings, I'm assuming you have to do the same, is being done annually. That's kind of a big piece that doesn't get talked about.
Sure.
Going after funds.
Tyler, could you hear that?
Yes, I could. And another great question. Yeah, most of the CCAs coordinate their continuing disclosure obligations through the triple CFA. And they typically, and it's paid for out of transaction cash flows, but they typically have a separate entity that handles the compilation and dissemination of the annual continuing disclosure obligations.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I love being stumped.
Yeah. Goldman.
Anything else?
That was all I had.
Okay. So we don't have the downside risk. So we do have these out of pocket expenses that are going to be, if we don't actually get anything out of this, we still have those expenses, right?
Not very many of them. Almost all of them are contingent on the transaction closing. Lisa, do you remember which? So is it the triple CFA fees? So
there would be the triple CFA fee. One of the other things we would have to do is the bonds have to be rated. So the bond rating agency will not make their funds contingent on the bond going forward. And so that would be the one other one. That will be, that may be part of this third step in terms of getting authorization for, but that would be the last thing we would pay for. And we would know at that point whether or not it's still likely that the bond, that we could meet the terms of the bond and that we could, you know, take the prepay to market.
Okay.
So some of the bigger costs are not.
And how do we determine the fair allocation with our CEA?
Between us and Redwood Coast?
Yeah. It says that we're going to be determined.
Yeah.
Equitable
rate. So right now we've only really seen staff time, and so that's been fairly equal. We have two colleagues with Redwood who've been part of these conversations. I think in the end it will be determined mostly by the volume that goes into it. So if say Redwood Coast ends up with about 60% mm-hmm. of the volume that's in the, you know, in the bond, then 60% of the cost would come out from them. We think it's going to be fairly close, so it's not going to be, we don't expect that to be something that would hold up the deal.
Okay. So it would be a quantifiable number, more or less. I think we might use some loose words because we don't know quite the answer yet, how it's all going to shake out, but it's not subjective.
Okay. It'll be fair and equitable. We can make sure it is. Okay.
Right, based on the deal size.
All right. So what are the next steps after this?
So we're working on, as Claude mentioned, really understanding that volume that we're bringing in to the transaction, plus all of the legal aspects to get that whole bond package together. I think we're hoping that at the June meeting, we would be able to come back and answer all of these questions, but also bring a discussion about, again, what that minimum savings would be, and maybe some other just options around, you know, say the term of this and how this will, you know, what that cash flow would look like or what the minimum might look like for approval. And then we would wait for whatever day kind of looks good. we're not being vague on what all of that step three looks like. Part of what we asked the counterparties, the Goldman Sachs and the other applicants, to do was to tell us, say, look at our load, not just a load. Mm-hmm. Look at ours and be creative. Tell us how, for what might be our only prepay, because we're small, tell us how we can sort of maximize this, not just in the most money in the first year, but in a way that gets us a stream of savings and that is cognizant or, you know, understands maybe limit, you know, the staff time that's needed to monitor this over time. And so they haven't done that yet because we're still just in the process of getting your approval to execute the agreement, but also sharing that information and moving forward. On the assumption that we'll have a May meeting, that, you know, if there are updates along those lines, we can share that as well, just to so that you don't wait 3 months and, you know, have to pick this very complicated thing back up again.
Okay. All right. Seems makes sense to me. I mean, it's really not a lot of risk and potential great gain for the taxpayers. So the motion to move.
Okay.
I second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Sorry.
Motion passes.
Great.
What's that?
You can breathe now.
Oh, fine.
And now we go on to DCE's 2026 Integrated Resource Plan. Could we have a staff report, please?
Chair Bernstein and Vice Chair Chavez, my name is Alvaro Valcarcel-Jervis, and I'll be presenting item 4C, which is not up yet. It'll be an overview of DCE's 2026 Integrated Resource Plan, IRP for short. We also have Mary Neal from MRW and Associates on the line, in case you have any questions. Okay, so what is the IRP? The IRP is a planning document that is required by the California Public Utilities Commission, CPUC, for all load-serving entities. It has a threefold purpose. First one is to ensure electricity supply meets the state's GHG reduction targets. Number two, maintain system reliability. Number three, achieve cost-effective procurement. It includes two sections. One is a narrative portion describing the procurement strategy in text form, and then a quantitative portfolio modeling in the form of Excel tables. IRPs are generally submitted every 2 years. DCE previously submitted IRPs in 2020, 2022, not 2024 because the CPUC restructured the planning schedule. There's also some delays which pushed the deadline to August 10th of this year. So why does the IRP matter? The IRP is designed to help LSCs, low-serving entities, to determine they have sufficient resources to serve customer demand while supporting the statewide energy goals, reliability, GHG emissions. And this IRP is particularly important because there are four drivers increasing that long-term planning importance. The first one, this will be the first IRP where LSCs have to model how they will meet California's 2045 goal of 100% clean electricity. Number two, there's an increase of extreme heat events, which put in a stress on the grid, so we need to plan better and be prepared. Number three, we're all seeing it, electrification of buildings and transportation. And then finally, increased demand from large loads like data centers. IRP drives procurement. So from last IRP in 2022, DCE signed a wind PPA with TerraGen, two battery storage agreements, one with IPA Power and then one with SB Energy, and also a geothermal PPA with Verbo Energy. The IRP process serves to craft DCE's resource planning strategy through modeling of portfolios that are both consistent with CPUC emissions benchmark and the board policy. The portfolios include renewable energy, you know, solar, wind, geothermal, also carbon-free resources like existing hydro, and it prioritizes local generation and economic development. This planning strategy includes modeling of different resource mix, procurement timing, risk management, and integration of states' allocation. This will be my last slide. So right now we're starting to work on the scenario modeling. We'll start shortly working on the narrative. Out of all the scenarios that we produce, one will be selected DCE preferred portfolio, and this will be used for the IRP. We'll bring this item back to the board in June, and then we'll submit to the CPUC by the deadline on August 10th, and also post it on DCE's website. That concludes my presentation. There are any questions you may have?
You said it was delayed to August 10th, 2026. How long will it be good for? Is it another 2-year term? Is that what? Okay.
I think it'll go back to the regular schedule every 2 years.
How do we plan for data centers, which we have no idea what's going to happen?
You asked a million-dollar question. That's a very hot topic with the commission. There's a lot of different ideas out there as to how to approach this. Talking about like a peanut butter method with everyone gets allocated what the projected demand is. There's ideas by CalCCA, for example, to not count the data center load until it is very close to materializing, which I think makes a lot of sense. But I think that's still up for debate.
If I could add just one thing. So for this planning exercise here, this plan, we submitted some information to the CPUC about what our current load is and what we think it is. They then turned around and told us what load through 2045 we have to model for. And so they kind of stuck it in. So,
but they accounted for data centers in there?
Yep. They don't have it called out separately, but it looks at the electrification that Claude was talking about. It assumed how much electrification would happen over that time period. And that load in 2045 is what, over twice what it is now? Mm-hmm. And that's what we'll be modeling to. So we may not procure all of that because we may not need it, but that's what we'll plan for. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And what's your thermal load? You mentioned geothermal in this. Can you go?
Oh, yeah. We signed a PPA with Fervo Energy for 4 megawatts of geothermal energy.
Okay.
That will come online in 2030.
Great. Interesting. All right. This is just receiving file, right?
Yes, information.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll be back in June.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Next. Informational reports, and then public comment, right?
One question on the informational reports.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
On the investment reports, Claude, I noticed December 31st, we still have the lion's share of money. Did we swap that already?
Yes, I believe we did. With the tight staff, sometimes the investment come lower down our responsibility things to do, but I noticed that when we put it together. So if it hasn't been yet, I'm hoping it should be moved by the end of this month.
Okay.
Because where a LAIF moves a little faster down.
LAIF follows CAMP. So CAMP has already, hit the high, and now they're starting to decline, and LAIF is still, it's ahead of them now.
Because they're maturity dates.
Okay.
Yep.
That was it.
Thank you.
Okay. And then the grants, those are still coming up.
Yeah, so the Calpine Community Energy Community Benefits Grant, we expect it to launch in early May. You received a presentation in September about the around $11,000 that Calpine is contributing to this program for certified 501c3s in Palm Springs.
Okay. And I want to call out, because it reminded me of the cost sharing with the city that was taken out of the budget, but that's just a timing issue. Next year, this was on the 4A.
Yes. This was the $1 million commitment to match Palm Springs residential programs. Just had some delays in getting that up and running, and so just wanted to be realistic in the budget.
Okay.
So the match is still committed.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the information?
No.
Okay. Now we have our second of two public comments to address the board. Any person wishing to address the board on items not appearing on this agenda may do so at this time. Do we have any public comment? Come and speak.
Yes. Should I come up?
Yeah, come and please sit down.
Thank you. I'm Donald Ziegler from Palm Desert. And if I just, I don't know if I'm allowed to ask questions, just a couple of comments on what you were just discussing.
Generally, we can't answer any questions, okay. But we can.
Well, I just noticed that the cloud part of his presentation was that energy rates are coming down, energy costs. I was just curious the basis for that. The second question was about the budget and the bonds thing. Are those, and I just saw the word municipal bonds up there. And my question was, are the bonds under the, is Palm Springs responsible for the final payment on those bonds, or is the DCE? I was just, that was a question. And the third comment is with the IRP. I've been to meetings with the joint, the Coachella Valley Power Authority. That question about data centers came up there. We also have a climate action plan. We have now the IRP. It seems like there's plans being developed piecemeal in different organizations within the valley that it just seems to me like all through all this, with CVAG especially, you're kind of the center of all these bodies, that there should be one organization that kind of takes a broad look at all of the power requirements in the Coachella Valley and the best way to deliver it. My focus and my concern has always been reliability, and I worry about the power going out this summer. My wife and I, we continually discuss, is it going to be safe to be here in July? And the actions that you do have a large, I come to a lot of these meetings, determine a lot about that decision for us. We love it here. We want to stay here, but it's getting pretty dangerous. And so the decisions you make about how you provide electricity in the valley here over the next 5 or 10 years, I think you're going to, it's a cost, it's a life and death issue, I think. So those are my comments.
Thank you. As I said, we can't respond to public comment.
I understand.
However, you can speak to staff afterwards, and if there's items that make sense to put on a future agenda, that can also be discussed by staff later.
Okay, so, I appreciate it.
We want to make sure that anything on the agenda, discussions that public has an opportunity to weigh in.
I understand. Thank you.
Okay. And announcements. We did announce that we are going to cancel the April 20th and move it to May. Is there a date in May?
Let me just double check. May 18th is my understanding, and where did my notes go? May 18th. Yes. I just didn't want to say it wrong because that would just make things way too complicated.
Yep. Okay. And anything else? With that, I adjourned at 3:57 p.m. Thank you.